This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You are about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL. And listen now to a talk Ben Freeman had with Dr. David Burney, professor of medicine at the University of Ottawa in Canada. They cover a randomized controlled trial of continuous versus interrupted novel oral anticoagulant therapy at the time of device surgery, Bruise Control 2 study.
Welcome to AXL.
Thanks for having me.
David, I think you have been involved with some of the most interesting studies done which have changed practice in putting in implanted devices related to bleeding, the real bugbear of procedural electrophysiologists who put these devices in people who are already on anticoagulant, for example, for atrial fibrillation and maybe on warfarin. We used to bridge them with heparin and we were always worried about the bleeding, but you did this fantastic study called Bruise 1. Could you just tell us what the bottom line or the top line result of that was?
In Bruise Control 1, we published in 2013, and we took patients at high risk for stroke and we randomized them to either performing the surgery with an INR of 2 to 3 or compared them to patients who had the standard of care, which was bridging with heparin. And we found that perhaps counterintuitively, continuing the warfarin led to a very significant reduction in device pocket bleeding, an 80% reduction.
Well, that's huge. And I know you told me earlier that you weren't expecting such a big reduction, but the amount of bleeding that you got with bridging in your study was exactly in line with what you'd predicted from previous trials.
That's correct. We had some cohort studies. You always worry about cohort studies, but it was accurate. What was unexpected was the magnitude of reduction with the continued warfarin.
Well, I think that's changed practice, but many people say, well, what the hell, it just means less bleeding and hematomas, that doesn't mean anything. What other problems will a hematoma give that you have really also had some insight into?
We did a follow-up study to Bruise Control 1 where we followed all the patients up to 1 year and looked for very important device infection, meaning device infection that needed extraction or endocarditis. We found that the most important risk factor for development of device infection was a clinically significant hematoma. And the magnitude of the risk it gave you was remarkable. You were 7.7 times more likely to get a device-related infection if you had this big hematoma.
So if you could reduce the hematoma rate, as you did by doing continuous warfarin, that would have reduced the infection rate dramatically.
This is a very clinically meaningful endpoint, we think, and I think we've shown that we've validated it as being very clinically meaningful.
Yeah, I think that infection after device implantation is just terrible. I mean, it's a horrendous thing to have to manage. So I think congratulations on showing that because it is an important differential. But in the meantime, times have changed and more people with atrial fibrillation are being treated with the NOACs or DOACs, depending on what you want to call them. So the real question is, what do we do when we are trying to implant a device in someone already on a NOAC? Tell us about Bruise 2.
So Bruise 2 was a similar design, similar patient group, obviously no valve patients, mostly all AF patients, and we randomized them to either continuing their drug throughout the surgical period or temporarily stopping them for about 72 hours.
What did you think you'd find?
Well, we weren't sure. These are such new drugs, and we actually started very shortly after dabigatran got its license. We started the study, so the experience was really unclear. We had no cohort studies really to base things on. We hypothesized that perhaps the interrupted DOAC would behave a little bit like heparin bridging in that you would get this sudden bolus of anticoagulation 24 hours after the procedure, which might lead to an increase in bleeding. That was our hypothesis.
I guess probably in the benefit of hindsight, I actually hypothesized the difference would be the other way. However, why don't you tell us what you actually found?
The study was actually stopped early because of very low event rates in both arms.
How many patients in the study?
We had 662 patients.
Evenly divided between the stop for a day or two or three. What was the average time you stopped the drug?
The average time was 72 hours.
Median time was 72 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. And you stopped early. Why?
For futility. And the event rate was so low in both arms. And it was actually identical in both arms, 2.1%, which compares to in Bruise 1, it was 16% in the event rate. So it's remarkably low, okay. Which is great.
Well, that's pretty amazing. 2%. How many major hematomas did that represent?
That was the primary endpoint. Those were all major hematomas. Same definition.
What about ischemic events?
Again, very low event rates. We weren't powered really, nowhere near powered to give us any signal there. So there was one.
How many events?
Well, there was one stroke in each arm.
So I guess very low event rate, and you stopped because you were unlikely to find a result.
I don't think it's a failed study. I think it's still a very important study. I think it tells clinicians either is reasonable depending on your clinical scenario. If you have a super high-risk patient for stroke, it's very reasonable not to stop it at all. If you have somebody at much lower risk, it's very reasonable to stop it for a few days.
So what would you do now in your patient? Someone comes in, would you try and estimate what their risk of bleeding would be?
Not so much what their risk of bleeding is, the more the risk of stroke. So, for example, if a patient's got atrial fibrillation, we want to cardiovert the patient on the table at the same time as doing their device. That's a super high-risk patient. We've already started to continue the drug for those type of patients.
And obviously, it's simple not to have to stop, because often when people are stopped, sometimes when they're stopped, they don't get restarted, certainly with other sorts of surgery.
Absolutely. Excellent point.
So it is simple. So that could be a take-home message. It's sort of safe to do either, but seeing it's pretty simple to just keep going, there doesn't seem to be any reason to stop.
I think the only concern is tamponade. If the NOAC doesn't have a reversal agent, I think people's comfort level will change as we get these reversal agents.
Well, I think you've really contributed a lot to this field with your group in the Bruise Control Group out of Canada. So I really wanted to compliment you on doing studies that will change practice and actually inform what we need to do and take us on into the NOAC era as well. So thank you very much for coming to AXEL, David.
Thank you for having me.
This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXEL, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to AXEL and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.